Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 2008 in review when we come back. When people call to law school, they ask sometimes how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on the radio, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 are incorporated into our federal Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, the common law was taken from the Mosaic law given to Moses at Mount Sinai, and it's recorded in the Bible in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. And it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income tax, property tax, and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws today are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of our tax and status school. We owe this income tax and Social Security tax because we've contracted for it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this tax and status issue, why don't you write for our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send us an email. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send that email request. Remember, again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about 2008 in review, and the last thing we brought up in the last program, we were talking about this guy named Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff is a Jew. He's more than likely a Zionist. I don't know that positively, but all of these Illuminists belong to a political organization called Zionism, and they've got a goal. They've got an agenda. They want to take over the world. They want to run it, and they're going to succeed. How do you like that? I wouldn't know that they're going to succeed if I hadn't read it in Bible prophecy. And the God of Abraham is going to make them succeed. He's going to guarantee their success. They're going to take over the world. They're going to run Russia and China and the United States and Great Britain and Brazil. They're going to run every country in the world. They're going to succeed in their goal for a short time. And then the Bible prophecy indicates that it's 1 hour. Now, a day in Bible prophecy is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So an hour would be 1/24th, or 1,000 divided by 24. How much is that? Just try it. 1,000 divided by 24. Well, it would be 41.66 years, or about one generation. It says about 1 hour. About one generation. Now, they've been in control of the world now for a good long time, starting with President Roosevelt back in 1933. They have made steady inroads into and the creation of the United Nations. They started that United Nations program back in 1945. Now, I don't know when this 1 hour begins. I'm not a prophet, and I can't tell you that, but it says about 1 hour here in Revelation, and they're going to succeed in their goal, and they're going to usher in these plagues, these woes that you see here in the book of Revelation. A description of chaos and war and death and destruction such as the world has never seen from the Garden of Eden until the second coming. In fact, in Matthew 24, remember I gave you these five chapters last time? It's Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. And Jesus in the New Testament explains those two chapters in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And if you take a look at Matthew 24, I think it's about verse 22, he says, "Except those days should be shortened, no flesh would be saved alive." That's how bad it's going to get. It's going to get to a point where it's going to threaten the continued existence of mankind on the planet. And we're not talking about global warming here, boys and girls. We're talking about World War III. We're talking about a time of chaos such as the world's never seen before. And it's being ushered in geopolitically. This is a geopolitical event. The Bible is not a religious book. It's a geopolitical book. It's a book on world government. It's a book written by the creator of the universe, and he's describing the history of mankind and where mankind is going and where he's going to take us. That's what it's all about. I wouldn't know this if I hadn't read it in the scripture. So when I tell you, I think that the United States is going into a period of famine, a period of national captivity. Now, if you take a look at your newspaper headlines and you watch Katie Couric and Brian Williams on the TV and you listen to what they're telling you, they're telling you just exactly what Jesus told you in Matthew 24. It's coming to pass right in front of your eyeballs. Most people can't see it because they're attuned to religion and they're thinking in religious terms rather than geopolitical terms. Now, I brought up Bob Chapman here in the International Forecaster, and I suggest that you subscribe to the International Forecaster, the Privateer, the Money Changer, the McIlvaney Report, some source of information of a geopolitical and economic nature so that you can see the other side of the coin. Because I showed you last time in this interview with Harold Rosenfall in talking about the protocols of the learned elders, the managed press is telling you a false story. Katie Couric, God love her, Brian Williams, Charlie Gibson, Jim Lehrer, they're all telling you the story. And probably from their point of view, they mean well, but they're lying to you. And lies come in more than one form. Sometimes it's, we just don't tell you the whole story. We don't tell you the whole truth. Sometimes we tell you the truth, but we leave out or we add in little foibles over there that aren't true. I liked old Will Rogers. You know, he had a little story that he told, and he said, "It isn't what people know; it's that people know so much that just ain't so." Now, today we're being pulled back and forth by these seemingly contradictory points. One guy says, "Oh, we've got inflation." Next guy says, "Oh no, we've got deflation." Next guy says, "Oh, we've got to stimulate the economy." Next guy says, "No, we shouldn't bail out the auto industry." And next guy says, "No, we should bail out the banking industry." And so we got all of this controversy going on. Truth of the matter is, nobody knows what the hell's going on or what the hell to do about it. That's what the bottom line is. Now, back in the Great Depression in the 1930s, they tried a lot of experiments. All the experiments failed. And all of those failed experiments are being rehashed. We're going to do them all again. They didn't work the last time, and they're not likely to work this time. There's a solution to depression, and it's called gold and silver coin. And George Washington wrote a letter to a friend of his in 1790. And he said, "I can't believe the turnaround in our national economy, our national fortunes, in just 36 months, from 1787 to 1790, by going to gold and silver coin. The solution is you get rid of the Federal Reserve, you get rid of unjust weights and balances, you get rid of credit and debt and usury, and you go back to gold and silver coin. You go back to practicing the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandment model, and you'll have prosperity." And as long as you stick with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model, you're going to have poverty. And that's just the way life is. Now, there's an interview here that I introduced to you last time by Walter White, of an administrative assistant to Jacob Javits. That's the guy's name. Couldn't think of his name last time. I'm going to write it right here on the front of this. Jacob Javits, who was a Jewish senator. Jacob Javits, J-A-V-I-T-S. And Rosenthal was his administrative assistant. And he's a Zionist. He's a Jew. He's not making any apologies for it. And he's giving an interview to a Christian by the name of Walter White. Now listen to this interview as it goes on. Walter White said to Harold Rosenthal, he says, "You speak of Jesus Christ as merely a man." And Rosenthal said, quote, "That's all he was, a man who walked on the earth like any other man. And this myth about Christ rising from the dead and returning to earth to visit his disciples is a bunch of crap. The Jews who drove the Arabs out of Palestine did so to disprove Christ's mission for a spiritual kingdom. You see, instead of a leader who would make an empire for the Jews, your kind of people gave the Jews a peaceful preacher called Christ who, instead of an eye for an eye, turns the other cheek. Rubbish. We are building, and in fact have built, an earthly empire without your kind and your disappointing Messiah." White says, "I can see that it is you and your kind who try to get Christ out of Christmas. I feel sorry for you." To which he quickly replied, "Now don't give me that kind of crap. I don't need your pity and I don't want it. Too many Jews don't have the guts to tell you how we live and plan, but I'm not intimidated by anyone or anything. I know where I'm going." White asked, when asked, "Why do Jews frequently change their names?" He said, "Jews are the most intelligent people in the world. So if it benefits them to change their names, they do so. That's all there is to it. They mix in your society, which is plenty corrupt. So while the Jews are benefiting themselves, the dumb goy doesn't realize that these Jews with non-Jewish names are in fact Jews. I know what you're thinking about Jews in the government who use non-Jewish names. Well, don't be concerned, because in the foreseeable future, there will be no presidential power in the United States. The invisible government is taking strength in that direction." All right, now, let me give you the 14th protocol, keeping in mind what Rosenthal has just told us here. It says here, the 14th protocol, "In this divergence between the Gentiles and ourselves, inability to think and reason, is to be seen clearly the seal of our election as the chosen people, as higher human beings, in contrast with the Gentiles who have merely instinctive and animal minds. They observe, but they do not foresee. And they invent, but nothing except material things. It is clear from this that nature herself predestined us to rule and guide the world." Boy, that's quite a statement. Harold Rosenthal. He went on to say, he asked this question, White asked the question, he says, "To your knowledge, are the Jews in Russia really persecuted, or are they given any kind of freedom?" To which he said, quote, "Most Jews throughout the world, and I'd say more than 90%, know what's really happening to our people. We have communication unequaled anywhere. It is only the jerks, the ignorant, the misinformed, and degenerates who can find peace in your society, and you bastards hide your sins by donning sheep's clothing. You are the hypocrites, not the Jews, as you say and write about so often. But to answer your question, in Russia there are two distinct governments, one visible and the other invisible. The visible is made up of different nationalities, whereas the invisible government is composed of all Jews. The powerful Soviet secret police takes its orders from the invisible government. and there are about 6 to 7 million communists in Soviet Russia. 50% are Jews and about 50% are Gentiles, but the Gentiles are not trusted. The communist Jews are united and they trust each other, while the others spy on one another. And about every 5 or 6 years, the secret Jewish board calls for the purge of the party and many are liquidated. But when asked why, he said, well, because they begin to understand too much about the Jewish secret of government. Russian communists have a secret group order which consists of Jews only. They rule over everything pertaining to the visible government. It was this powerful organization that was responsible for the secret removal of the center of communism to Tel Aviv, from where all instructions now originate. Now, does our government and the United Nations have knowledge of this? And Rosenthal replied, the United Nations is nothing but a trap door to the Red World's immense concentration camp, and we control the United Nations. When asked why the communists destroy the middle class or educated people and their entire families when they invade a country, Mr. Rosenthal replied, it is an established rule to destroy all members of pre-existing government, their families, and their relatives, but never Jews. They destroy all members of the police, state police, army officers, and their families, but never Jews. You see, we know when a government begins to search for the communists within its borders, that they're actually attempting to uncover the Jews in their area. And we're not fooled by all of this. The invisible rulers in the communist countries have a world control over the propaganda, the governments, and the media of the free countries. We control every media of expression, including newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, even your music. We censor the songs that's released for publication long before they reach the publishers. Before long, we will have complete control of your thinking. Now, let's pause here for a minute and think about this. Complete control of our thinking. Well, what makes you think that there's going to be a deflation? Well, because that's all the media tells us. There isn't any other voice out there that says, no, deflation is a feint. Deflation's not our problem. Inflation is our problem. You take this guy, Ron Paul, running for president, said what we need to do is abolish the IRS. So what Ron Paul suggested is that we abolish the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. No, we're not going to have that. Ron Paul suggested that the Federal Reserve be abolished. That's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. No, we're not going to abolish the fifth plank. Barack Obama isn't going to abolish the income tax or the central bank or public school. Those are three very important planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, communism and Judaism go hand in hand. There's only two political ideologies extend on planet Earth. Think about it. You sit here and you talk about fascism and communism and socialism and capitalism. All of them embrace paper money. All of them embrace credit and usury. All of them embrace government-controlled public schools. All of these ideologies embrace central banking. Only the Ten Commandments are opposed to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And so, Americans and Britons and French and Irish and everybody in the world, Japanese and, you know, you Orientals and Chinese and you Latin Americans, all of you are married to and wedded to the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto. Rosenthal is simply telling you, well, I'm an insider and let me tell you how this comes down. And listen, you can sit there and say, that guy Gordon, he's anti-Semitic. No. These protocols of the learned elders have already been put into effect. It's already a done deal. And you Jews don't even have to deny it. It's a waste of your time. You have succeeded in your goal. And it's world domination. And the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is going to make it a certainty that you're going to succeed in your goal for world government for about 1 hour, about 41.66 years. One generation. But then there's going to be hell to pay for it. There's going to be an outcome to this. Rosenthal, very pragmatic fellow, he's talking about money. Now, we're talking about money. We're talking about the economic collapse. This is called the sixth protocol. Listen to Rosenthal here. Now, White starts off by asking him this question. He says, I told him of my in-depth study of the Jews and that there was few who have done more research on world Jewry than I had, and about my unpleasant discoveries, reminding Mr. Rosenthal that there is no morality among Jews. And Rosenthal replied to that argument, to that statement. He said, money is more important than morality. We can accomplish anything with money. Our people are proving that in Israel, where its strength against attack is its permanent state of war readiness, Israel can now win in any encounter. The kibbutz-raised intellectual elements are going to build that small country into a Middle Eastern wonderland. It will also eventually be the base for our world government headquarters. Okay, world government headquarters, centered in Jerusalem, where the temple is built. Where the new temple is going to be built, on the Temple Mount. Now listen to this, the sixth protocol. It's talking about money. Listen to this. It says, we shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth, upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. You just saw it. August 2007. The collapse of the world's economy is underway. Takes 3.5 years, boys and girls, to reach the bottom. Well, that's what it did the last time, from October of 1929 to March of 1933. 3.5 years. Just start counting from August of 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, so around January of 2011, we should be at the bottom. And there's going to be an outcome that comes from that. From all the poverty, the homelessness, the foreclosures, there's going to be the revolution. Civil unrest. You see it right now today going on in Iceland. And there's discontent. There's problems around the world. And it's getting worse. And it will continue to build and build and build until finally the conclusion to it will be war. But going on, he says, the economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination. And we must develop by every means the importance of our super government, representing that government as the protector and benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. You go down and get your mark of the beast and shut your mouth and everything's going to be fine. If you don't, watch out. Now, the aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they are harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood. Therefore, at all costs, we must deprive them of their land. And that's why you're going through these foreclosures. We're going to deprive you of that land. Now, the best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and mortgage indebtedness. These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. At the same time, it is necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation, the function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. It is necessary for industry to deplete the land both of laborers and capital, and through speculations transfer all of the money of the world into our hands, thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. That's the sixth protocol. All right, now let's analyze that. It says, at this time, it is necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation. Invest for the long haul. Invest in stocks. They want you to invest for retirement. There are no examples in the Bible of anybody retiring. It's a fiction. In order for you to retire, you have to be a member of a Ponzi scheme. You have to have more people supporting you in retirement than you could produce in your working lifetime. You know, if you stop and think about it pragmatically, if all of us, let's take 100 people now, 100 in our group, 100 people want to retire, then all 100 of those people have to produce enough in their working lifetime to carry them for the last 17 years of their life, which is in today's dollars about $750,000. That's impossible. Boys and girls, people who want to maintain their standard of living at $40,000 a year for 17 years, multiply it out, 17 times 40,000 is $680,000, that's $700,000. So what they do is they create a Ponzi scheme like Social Security, where you got 80 people paying in 1940 for everyone that's on retirement. And then it degenerates to 45 to 1 by 1945, and then 16 to 1 by 1957, and then 3.4 to 1 by 1997, I think it was, and then 2 to 1, and then 1 to 1. That's all it is, a Ponzi scheme. The Bible does not tell you to retire. It tells you to work until you die. That's the model. Now, at the same time, it's necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation. Speculation in what? Stocks and bonds, so that you can make these profits and retire. The function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Speculation in Wall Street is a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. So Roosevelt created this federal land bank to keep your farms and your homes and your businesses in a state of unconditional subordination in debt. What did God tell you about debt? What did God tell you about paying usury and interest? What did he tell you about unjust weights and balances, boys and girls? So these guys over here came along and said, God's dumb. You want debt. You want to pay interest and usury. You want paper money, credit cards, and speculation, and stocks and bonds so that you can retire. Okay, get after it. Let's see how it works out for you. It is necessary for industry to deplete the land of both laborers and capital, and through speculations transfer all the money of the world into our hands. That's exactly what they've just done. All the money in the world is in the hands of the bankers worldwide. It's in the hands and under the control of the central banks. Henry Paulson goes into Congress and says, give us $700 billion, and Congress does what? God, they fell all over themselves to give the bank $700 billion, no strings attached. Meanwhile, auto sales drop off by 40%, and the automakers, they come over to Washington and say, give us a loan. We'll pay you back. Help us. And Congress says, go to hell. We ain't helping. thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. The plan is very simple. We're going to bankrupt all of you Americans in the middle class, all of you Englishmen, all of you Frenchmen. We're going to bankrupt you. And then, when you're losing your homes, your cars, and your jobs, then we will come to you and say, come down here and get your mark of the beast in your right hand and in your forehead, and we'll roll your debt over, and we'll let you stay in your house, keep your car, and we'll put you to work. And you people are going to line up to get your mark of the beast. And when you do, you're signing your own death warrant. Because the God of Israel says, if you've got the mark of the beast, I'm going to kill you. And then your secular government over here says, if you don't have the mark of the beast, then you're going to lose your house, your car, your job, and starve to death. So, boys and girls, you're going to have to make a choice here, aren't you? At some point in time, you got to make a choice. All right, now I'm going to have to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing and recommending are going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, or the sponsors, or the management or staff of this radio network, or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're taking a look here at the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in the context of an interview by Walter White of the administrative assistant of Jacob Javits back in 1972. Jacob Javits was a Jewish senator from New York State, and Rosenthal was his administrative assistant. Now, the only time that you and I, you know, us goys out here, bottom feeders, the only time that we get a glimpse of what the hell's going on behind the scenes is when one of these insiders comes out and spills the beans. And that's exactly what Rosenthal did here. But he got a little bit uppity, and they killed him. He talked too much. And so they killed him. So White goes on and he asks him some more questions over here, and he said that in the quietness of this enlightening conversation, it became clear that the understanding poured forth did not come from a novice. Mr. Rosenthal was asked how Jews gained acceptance so easily among other races. and his answer was long and it was thorough. Here's what Rosenthal said. He said, quote, "At a very early date, urged on by the desire to make our way in the world, Jews began to look for a means whereby we might distract all attention from the racial aspect. Now, what could be more effective, and at the same time more above suspicion, than to borrow and then utilize the idea of a religious community? We've been forced to borrow this idea from the Aryans. We Jews never possessed any religious institution which developed out of our own consciousness, because we lack any kind of idealism. The Talmud does not lay down principles with which to prepare the individual for any life to come, but rather furnishes only rules for a sumptuous life here in this world. Our teachings are not concerned with moral problems, but rather with how to get. Our life is of this world, and of this world only, and our mentality is as foreign to the spirit of Christianity as our character was to the founder of this new creed 2,000 years ago. The founder of Christianity made no secret of his... Can't read that word there. It's got a hole through it. Something about intimidation of the Jews or estimation of the Jews and the fact that he was not one of us. When he found it necessary to throw us out of the temple of God, because then, as always, we used religion as a means of advancing our commercial interests. If you'll remember, there's a statement in the scripture about Jesus driving the money changers out of the temple. Driving the bankers out of the temple. No, money changers. That's what he's referring to here. And he goes on to say, "But at the same time, we managed to nail Jesus to the cross for his attitude towards us, whereas the modern Christians enter into party politics, and in order to win elections, they debase themselves by begging for Jewish votes. They even enter into political intrigues with us against the interests of their own nation. We can live among other nations and states only so long as we succeed in persuading them that the Jews are not a distinct people, but are the representatives of a religious faith, who therefore constitute a religious community. Though this be of a peculiar character, as a matter of fact, this is the greatest of our falsehoods." Now that fits right in with the 14th protocol. Now listen to this. "When we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming with God, with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. For this reason, we must destroy all other religions, thereby... If thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims. A world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we're assured against this by roots of dissension, among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and national interests of the Gentiles, by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for 20 centuries. Did you get that? Religious and race hatreds generated by policy. You take a look at the Irish. You know, those people over there, Catholic and Protestant, they hate each other. Same race of people. But that's an antagonism over religion. Take a look at the Jews and the Arabs. You can take a look at the Orientals, the Chinese, and the Occidentals. Everywhere in the world there's strife, there's hatred. But you also notice that it's the policies that we follow. Now, God separated all of us at the Tower of Babel. We'll take a look here at Genesis chapter 11, first 10 verses. Segregation is the order of the scripture. And what do we see today here in the United States of America? Integration. everywhere. We want to integrate. And integration and segregation is equivalent to discrimination. See, in your mind, if I say segregation, you immediately think of discrimination and victimization of blacks. That's race hatred. It's not true, but that's the perception that you get. So when we talk about depression, you think of deflation. No. You see, the single greatest period, or the single most deflationary period, or the poorest period in the history of the United States is 1942 to 46. Nobody calls that a deflation. Nobody calls that a depression. We had rationing, for crying out loud. Rationing. World War I, 1917-18. We had rationing. That was a real deflation. That was a real decrease in your standard of living. So you take a look at inflation. Biggest period of inflation, 1972 to 2000. Our living standards went down by 18%. Real wages went down by 18%. It was the biggest inflationary period in our history. And yet we call that boom times. No. You got your wife out there working with you, partner. It takes two of you to make the same standard of living as my dad provided in 1955. So we're getting poorer and poorer, and we're following these protocols is what it boils down to. Now, you know, you can sit here and write me a letter and tell me, hey, you know, I think you're a racist. Well, wait a minute. Hang on. The world's first racist is God Almighty Himself, who separated the races. The world's first racist is God Almighty Himself. He's the one that created the races. Have you ever thought about that? God Himself created the races. We don't have just one race. We've got several. We've got a plethora of races running around on planet Earth. And He's the one that separated us, and He's the one that told us to stay separated. We're the guys that came along and said, oh no, God made a mistake. We're going to integrate all these people. We're going to call America the melting pot of the world. We're going to bring all these races in here to the United States. In this election, this race thing over here was a pretty important factor in electing Barack Obama. Blacks and Hispanics went for Barack Obama. Now watch what happens here. Barack Obama, black man, is elected by a coalition of whites, blacks, and Hispanics. Well, naturally the blacks and Hispanics want to take over politically. They want to control it. They want to control America, and they're doing that. See, in 1960, Americans were comprised of same racial groups, but in smaller numbers, 90% white and about 10% black and all others. Today, it's 68% white, about two-thirds, and about one-third all others. By the year 2050, it will be 50% white and 50% all others. Boys and girls, what do you think is going to happen to the white race after 2050? Huh? Have you thought about that? See, the Jews figured that out right up front. They said, we've got to have a two-state policy here in Palestine. Because if we have a one-state policy, the Arabs, the Palestinians, are going to outbreed us. They'll just vote us out. Americans haven't figured that out yet. See, the white Anglo-Saxons in America have not figured out that all the other races are just going to vote you out. Now, that's where you're headed. That's what integration's going to get you. That's why your God told you to remain separate, but you didn't listen. Now, there's an outcome coming from that, and it's national captivity. And the national captivity is going to come at the hands of these people that we call Jews, who have already taken over the world. They're already in political and economic control. They're not in military control yet, but they're going to be very shortly. As soon as they destroy the United States of America, they're already in control of Russia. they're just going to take over the world, and there's a World War III coming. You'll see that in Bible prophecy, a World War III. And World War III, the next round is going to be nuclear bomb war. And it talks about the destruction of whole cities. Boys and girls, this is not going to be pleasant. Not going to be pleasant at all. And that's the 10-plank model. The 10-commandment model now brought us peace and prosperity. But you know, Americans have got their nose in everybody's business. Well, our nose is in the Chinese business in Taiwan. Our nose is in the Russian business in Soviet Georgia. Our nose is in the Japanese business in our occupation forces. Our nose is in the European business in NATO. Americans have bases in 137 countries in the world. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard in 120 countries in the world. My God, our occupation forces are in more countries than that. Hell, there's only 200 countries in the world. And America has bases and has military personnel in 137 of them. What percentage is that? 137 divided by 200. 68%, two-thirds. We have military forces in two-thirds of the countries in the world. Hell, the Roman Empire never did that, and the British Empire never did that. America is a colonial power. America is a world-ruling empire. And if you'll take a look in the book of Revelation, this world-ruling empire is going to be destroyed. We are that beast power. We Americans, we are the beast. I like that. Now, the big city that's going to be destroyed and all the merchants of the earth are going to lament is probably going to be New York City. Not Rome. It's called Rome. It's New York City. And the ultimate top dogs, when it's all said and done, who's going to run the world? This great battle of Armageddon is coming down in Palestine, 35 miles northeast of Jerusalem. Boys and girls, this is not going to be good for the Jews. Do you think a 200 million man army and a little country about the size of Massachusetts fighting a battle that's going to kill 200 million people 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem is a good place to be? I didn't write that. I'm just a reporter here. I just wanted to point that out. Now, Rosenthal was asked, we are obliged to conceal our own particular character and mode of life so that we will be allowed to continue our existence as a parasite among the nations. Our success in this line has to be so far that many believe that the Jews among them are genuine Frenchmen or Englishmen, Italians or Germans who just happen to belong to a religious denomination, which is different from that prevailing in those countries, especially in circles concerned with government, where the officials have only a minimum of historical sense. We're able to impose our infamous deception with comparative ease. Now listen to the Ninth Protocol as it deals with the control of governments like France and Germany, Belgium, Luxembourg, Ireland, England, America. Listen to this. In order not to destroy prematurely the Gentile institutions, we have laid our efficient hands upon them and rasped the springs of their mechanism. They were formerly in strict and just order, but we have replaced them with a liberal, disorganized, and arbitrary administration. We have tampered with jurisprudence, the franchise, the press, freedom of the person, and most important of all, education and culture, the cornerstone of free existence. We have misled, stupefied, and demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education in principles and theories patently false to us, but which we have inspired. Above existing laws, without actual change, but by distorting them through contradictory interpretations, we have created something stupendous in the way of results. The Ninth Protocol. Hey, listen, they've already succeeded in doing that. We have been misled, stupefied, and demoralized by way of education and principles and theories like the theory of evolution, by the destruction of the Ten Commandments from our public institutions and in our public schools, by the arbitrary destruction of prayer in public school, morality in public office, by the destruction of our dollar, by the destruction and the theft of our gold and silver coin, our monetary system, by the introduction of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in place of the 10 Commandments. I mean, these people, when Rosenthal says that the Jews are smarter than the average Christian, he's not whistling Dixie. Hey, that's exactly correct. Just take a look at the results. The proof of the pie is in the eating. Hell, they've already succeeded. What I'm reporting is past events. This is what they have accomplished. This is what they have done. Now, they couldn't have done that except that we turned our back on the Creator, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We would not practice the Ten Commandments. So they came to us and said, well, wouldn't you like to have paper money? And we said, oh, God, yeah. Wouldn't you like to have credit cards, debt, interest, and usury? Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you like to have mortgages on your house so that we can put the land in a state of unconditional subordination? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we want. We want to be the serfs. We want to be the servants of the bankers. Now, it just so happens that not all bankers are Jews, but it just so happens that many of the most prominent bankers, like J.P. Morgan and the big names, you know, like Harriman and Rothschild and so on, those people are all Jews with an agenda. They're Zionists. They have an agenda. World domination, world rule, of which they're going to succeed. They got one generation, 1 hour. They're in control. They're taken over. They've already taken over. In fact, Rosenthal was asked that. And he said, we're not going to tell you people that we've taken over. Hell, that's counterproductive. Counterproductive. Why do you want to tell a slave that he's a slave? You tell that slave that he's free and it makes him feel good all over. Take a look at our military. They're out fighting wars in Afghanistan. In Iraq. In the hell is our vital interest in Afghanistan? Opium poppies, heroin. That's our vital interest in Afghanistan. What's our vital interest in Iraq? 25% of the world's oil supply is in Iraq. That's our vital interest. Stealing oil and growing growing opium poppies. Under the American occupation in Afghanistan, the opium poppy trade, which was virtually wiped out under the Taliban, has been reestablished under the American occupation, and 2006, 7, and 8, 3 years in a row, bumper crops of heroin poppies. And we got a war on drugs? Come on, wake up. Wake up out there. A war on drugs? Come on. You got more drugs in the United States of America today with a drug czar in your war on drugs than you have ever had in the history of the nation. The public policy is to tell you that we're opposed to these illegal drugs. But the public policy has created more drugs in America than we've ever had in this country in our history. In fact, the drugs are so prevalent in the United States that it's depressing the price. The price of cocaine and marijuana is at a low ebb because of the humongous supply. Now, the drug trade in America is proof positive of the benefits of the vitality of the free marketplace. Think about it. Marijuana production in the United States of America in 2008 is $37 billion a year. Its closest rival, I think, if I remember right, was four big crops. It's wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton. I think wheat was number one at $30 billion a year. I mean, we're subsidizing wheat farmers. The wheat farmers are in debt up over their eyeballs, can't hardly make a living. They're getting price supports from the government. And I take the marijuana farmers of America. They get no price supports. They're hounded and hunted. And if they're caught, they're jailed. They get no government help at all. They got no marketing plan. They got no advertising. And they got $37 billion a year. Biggest agricultural crop in America is marijuana. Now, you tell me that the free market system and supply and demand doesn't work. By God, it works in the drug trade. And it would work for you wheat farmers and corn farmers if you'd quit practicing communism and go back to the Ten Commandment model. You know, the crazy part of it is that the drug trade is operating on the Ten Commandment model, and those guys are making money hand over fist. They just can't make it fast enough. Got no place to put it. They got so much money, they pack millions of dollars in the trunks of their cars and drive down the road, and when the highway patrol catches them and seizes $2 million, it doesn't even disrupt their operations. Seizing $2 million from some drug guy over here is chicken feed. And you farmers are out here just working your hearts off trying to badger your representatives and senators to giving you more socialism. Hasn't it ever dawned on you that the golden age of American agriculture was 1865 to 1910, when you were practicing the Ten Commandments, making money hand over fist, making real 4.5% growth per year compounded? Come on. 2008 is a year, in retrospect, that'll go down in history as a year separate from all others. It's like 1941, the attack on Pearl Harbor. It's like 1776, the writing of the Declaration of Independence. It's like 1969, a man lands on the moon. 2008 will go down in history. You mean it's going to be emblazed in our memories like 1929, the Great Depression. But there's a rhyme and reason to it. There's a reason for it. This isn't happening by accident. And this guy Bernie Madoff over here made off with about $100 billion. And these guys toy with the goy like a cat plays with a mouse, says Rosenthal. Now just take a look at what Ben Bernanke and Henry Paulson were able to do. They went into the Congress of the United States with one page. And Congress said, well, we'll give you the $700 billion, but they got a 468-page law written in about a week. And no strings attached. And I read to you here from the International Forecast. Remember a couple of programs back? And Bloomberg is suing to get the information. They call it a state secret. What did you do with the $700 billion we gave you? Oh, that's national security. That's a trade secret. We're not even going to tell you what we did with the money. Huh? Have we taken leave of our senses? Have we gone stark raving mad in this country? That goes on right under your nose, reported by Brian Williams and Katie Couric, and you people out there can't connect the dots? You think that that's just accidental? Well, I don't know. We got to do something here. We got this economic crisis, and we got to print more money. Printed $8.5 trillion in 13 weeks. Don't you think that's going to come back and haunt us? $8.5 trillion in 13 weeks. Tuck that one away in your heart. And about out of time here again, kids. We're going to have to leave it there and remind you that you're listening or have been listening now to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.